Thank you, Mary Jo, for a wonderful presentation. It was a little bit like, I think you'll agree with me, it was like drinking water out of a fire hose.
I'm sorry. I know.
It's wonderful. We will pore over your slides. Will you allow us to post it on our website?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yes.
People can refer back to things that you did. I actually had three canned questions here that my staff prepared for me, but I think I'm going to ask you three other questions.
Okay.
And then we'll open it up to the audience. The first one is, I should preface this with this statement. I know that some of your very strong statements about fitting jobs to, fitting degrees to jobs is going to raise some hackles in our community. So I do want to make the point that this session is about economic development. And so we're looking to see how what we do here can support economic development. That doesn't exhaust the range of activities, of programs, and of value that we provide to our students. There is that other major mission of universities, which is to prepare citizens for a vibrant democracy and to reach a rich, rewarding life, to lead a rich, rewarding life. And so those are other aspects of our institution that just because we haven't focused on them today doesn't mean that they're not very important. I also, but even within the range of, within the focus on economic development, in the idea of aligning how we prepare students better with jobs and careers that are out there, do you think that, I was a little concerned about that diagram that showed how Harvard was projecting, occupations and lifetime value and so forth. It's nice that they distinguish between the lifetime value for businesses versus the lifetime value for individuals and how, the best is a win-win quadrant there,
right,
at the upper
exactly.
right hand. But even so, doesn't that still presuppose that there's a one-to-one match between majors and careers? And is that really, should that be the goal, or should it be focusing on competencies that students could have that can then, it's a little bit of a loaded question,
sure.
but, that could make them more flexible and allow them to change occupations over their lifetime. And so would tailoring degrees and programs so tightly to current job titles, would that give them rather a short shelf life?
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more. So I think the America Works that NGA is working on is definitely focusing on, it's not just about the degree, thinking about other kinds of training, certificates, thinking about stacking credentials, all the things that's in the field out there. There's no question that the right policy way to go, definitely a lot of conversation around that. I think the challenge from this perspective is really the issue of states, governors, others who work on economic development see, some high growth, high demand, and high-paying jobs not being filled, and they're puzzled by what to do about it. So the natural reaction is, I got policy levers. What do I have to work with? So from an elected official, I've got these levers. I can do this. And so there's certainly that kind of notion. But I think everybody would say that, and my argument is usually, it's not about everything. It's about you basically have to say, these are important to our industry here. And we are going to incentivize or put some money on the table if you're willing to help meet those needs. But that's not taking away from the full understanding of what the role of education in the university is. So and it's the same for research. I don't tell governors that every researcher should be thinking about commercializing or being an entrepreneur. The most important thing you can say is, this is important. I'm willing to put a pot of money on the table, and if you want to help meet that need, you get money to help meet that need. But if you still want to focus here and do some of that, that's great too. You know, mm-hmm. you need to think about that. So I think that's very important. I think the whole field, believe me, I'm not the education policy person, but we do a lot with education. And I can tell you, as you all know, the world is changing faster than we can keep up. So I think we're all aware that we've got to figure out a way to measure your what you're prepared for, not by just your degree, but what your skills are. And I think we had a conversation earlier that more and more, I think most people are thinking that those degrees need to be thinking much more about problem-solving skills and other things, and not just some of the things that we've traditionally thought of as what that degree says you know how to do. Mm-hmm. That degree should say, you know how to do this. And that's need to be what's happening in the classroom so that you know how to do this. And we have a very good signal. I mean, that's the issue. You tell me you got a degree from X from somewhere. I don't know. Industry's telling us, I'm not sure I know what that means. Because they come in my door and it doesn't quite fit with what I thought they would be able to know and do. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of, you know, communication. So our whole issue about the CHAIRS initiative is, we have to get everybody at the table. It's got to be the economic development community, the workforce community, the education community, and industry at the table to start talking about these things and figuring out how to align it.
Thanks.
So definitely.
Let me give an opportunity for our audience to ask a couple of questions before we break up. And we do have a reception for Mary Jo Waites at the University Center next door right after we conclude here. Can't quite see who's...
I know, it's hard.
We have microphones here.
Okay. So, yes.
I was a bit concerned, as Dr. Ochoa was, about the diagram from Harvard. In this manner, I noticed that from what you had presented, a distinct absence, except toward the case example in the end of the... thank you.
Except in the case study that you presented about Walla Walla, regarding considerations of sustainability and environmental management. Now, I'm of the belief that business and sustainability and environmental management go hand in hand, that those considerations are strong, and I see it, for example, in President Crowe's approach at ASU and the establishment of the College of Sustainability.
Sure.
Now, I wonder... where in the conversation this fits. I have tremendous respect for Jeffrey Immelt, by the way, and what he has done regarding GE's approach to business. And in that, where in that conversation at the National Governors Association does the consideration, one, of environmental and sustainability considerations come in, and two, shared value with communities. Since Michael Porter invented the term, it seems to me that his involvement ought to bring to it benefit to the communities in which these organizations, these business entities, would bring.
Well, so my examples were chosen because of... sort of outside folks have sort of said they do this well. It wasn't about the industry. And I was sort of preference that in my remarks, that they might not fit totally with your particular clusters or industry here, but there are some common characteristics to those, whether it's Onami or Walla Walla, they're working on some common things. So there are plenty of examples, just as you said, the Center for Sustainability at ASU. One of my examples in there that I didn't talk about was the Colorado Clean Energy Collaboratory. Fantastic model. It basically, Colorado said, we're going to be leading in clean energy. And just like Onami said, but we're not going to do it with one university. Our strength is going to come by collaborating across all the universities, plus a federal lab. And that collaboratory is all about coordinating that research agenda, not as strongly as Onami and others in terms of the workforce element of it. But there are all kinds of examples of where communities have decided sustainability was their area of expertise, and they've built these same kinds of organizations and same kinds of agendas around it. So by me picking those, it was really a statement of who I see as putting all the best pieces together.
Thanks. Yes.
Mary Jo Waits, I want to thank you for delivering an incredibly interesting and idea-filled presentation. I made the mistake of arriving late, and if you arrive late, you miss a lot. But what I did get was a lot of interesting observations on something that's very locally involving, which is wine production and wine grape production. Monterey County produces the largest volume of grapes of any county in California. It is numero uno. However, the value added part goes to Napa, Sonoma, those areas who import, and the Monterey County grape production to blend in with other grapes in order to produce some incredibly, the non-two-buck chuck type wines and all. And this has been very interesting because wine consumption has astounded everyone. Prices have never been higher. Volumes have never been greater. People are wondering who on earth is consuming all this wine. what's going on here? But nevertheless, in California as a whole, we export more STEM graduates than we employ here. They learn here, they go to other places. And we also have the curse of something called Prop 13, which does a magnificent job of driving out industry to our neighboring places and so forth. What I'm getting around to is there are many factors here other than just the university. My question is, I think you're neglecting some of the barriers that have been created by various things like California's notorious regulatory climate, its incredibly lack of friendliness to we're number two. We're two up from the bottom from New York, which is the worst place in the world to start a business and so forth. I think you've done a good job on the role of the university and how it can be very useful, but there are many other factors here that are involved, and I think you might give them some consideration.
Sure. Well, so my requested topic was the role of the university, not the role of all state governments in this sense. So there's no question that, regulatory and tax environment is certainly a foundational element, as is transportation, which all three of those I don't tend to talk about, primarily because I can tell you most policy advisors, policy people I know about those really well because they hear about them a lot. And so what they don't know are the things I talk about, frankly. And so that's why I focus on sort of the talent. They do know that, but how I can add value to what they know is really much more about the area that I'm talking about. But there's no question that, if you've got difficult. And then the second thing I will say is Jim Collins taught us this from the good to great. He basically said, you could say all day, if this was only different, I could do X. And most companies that are gone good to great didn't say, well, if I didn't have to compete in the global marketplace, I could do this. It's really about, this is what I got, so I've got to work with it, and I'm going to do what I need to do, and not just say I wish the world would change, because I've got to work, and I've got to survive, and I've got to compete. So I think that's part of it. But I think if you can control local regulatory issues, you should. Many of those issues. Now, having said that, I'm talking about time for permitting. And those kinds of things are really important, or you can't get access to, the university to talk about training program or something like that. You can fix those for sure. The other thing I'll say is I'm just totally talking off of just the cuff. I heard a conversation, but I thought it was very intriguing. Some of the advanced manufacturers in California are making an argument in the process we talked about, the California Summit process, where the regions are bubbling up their strategies that's being put on by foundations and the business leadership, where the state kind of bubbles up a strategy by what the regions are. In those conversations with advanced manufacturers, I've heard a number of the large companies saying, we might be able to call that a strength, and that we figured out how to survive and compete here and at the meeting the regulations in California, and we can consider that sort of a competency that we wouldn't have thought of. So how do we turn that into an opportunity rather than just thinking about it as a strategy? Now, that's totally, I just heard it in one short conversation, but I thought it was a novel idea. So... might be something that's valuable. And then most industry will tell you meeting standards, reasonable standards, are really help them in terms of what they're doing in order to be competitive if they can do that. So,
question? One more question? Two? Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your presentation. I had a question for you about productivity. And you said the value and need of productivity and of measuring that, just like universities need to be assessed and measured, so does business. But my concern is our primary method of measurement of productivity is the GDP. Is that the method you're talking about? Because that neglects so many things, such as... Is the industry doing something that's actually good for the community and for population rather than earning income? Can you address that issue?
Well, productivity in the classic sense is sort of what is the value you get for the inputs? So for the amount of inputs going in, either talent, technology, capital, what is the value of your output? So thinking of it that way, it could be measured for a state, state gross products. Certainly, companies obviously have their own measures. In the university side, it's sort of like, given what's going in, what is the return on investment coming out? What are we getting in terms of the amount in for the amount coming out? Is sort of the thinking of that. The metrics are different from all places. It's the concept of if you're not worrying about adding value, and increasing value, you're probably not thinking about the right things in terms of industry. As Michael Porter said, if you have a company who hasn't changed anything in the last 5 years, they're probably not focusing on their productivity or doing very well.
On the policy side, Dan, I think that your point is the measure of output full enough
right
measure? Does it capture all of the
correct
all of the goods? And clearly, what may seem like to a business like an onerous regulation may, in fact, from a policy standpoint, be a way of internalizing
right
what are negative externalities
right
of their activity. And the only problem is when you do that locally, while the company has to compete globally, and then that creates
right
a problem.
Correct.
That's a challenge for policy.
Correct.
But it's definitely a real issue. And we do need to, ideally, the kind of a sophisticated regulatory environment that was not unduly punitive should be able to capture those right. negative externalities. And so if businesses are able to thrive in an environment like that in California, let's assume for a minute that all of our California regulations are wise and enlightened. if that were the case, you know, then we could really be pointing the future to a better, you know, a better standard of living for the whole world if our companies can thrive in that
right.
environment.
That was kind of the statement. You articulated it much better than I heard it. It was sort of like, well, we could argue that that's a strength
yeah.
that we have as companies here in California.
Great. Was there one more
just
question?
Just one last question over here.
Thank you. I can't see. Okay. Switching gears back to the image that you showed us where there was the hub for the innovation centers and everyone inputting into this central organization of some kind.
Oh, yeah.
I've thought a lot about that and over time. And I'm wondering if you could expand a little bit on what it is that you found in those case studies that were the incentives and or the punishments for not coming to the table and getting past those individual silos that sometimes are very difficult to break down and get everyone to really participate in those collaboratively in that through that central organization. What is it that were the criteria in those case studies you thought were so successful?
Well, for those kinds of organizations, there are certain components that are kind of created or set there. I mean, a group has already gotten together and said, this is important, we need to do it, and this is what our vision is and what we're working towards, and we're putting resources on the table for that. The rest of it is really, it's really about the networking and connecting. I mean, it's really this talent of, oh, you're important to the competitiveness of my companies. I've got to figure out how to bring you in and connect you so that you see value. So it's not easy. It's hard work, I can assure you, from what I've seen. And most of it, so the other one I didn't put up there, and they're just down the street, so to speak, up the street in San Francisco, is the Regis Kelly, who runs the Quantitative Biosciences Institute, which is one of California's four science and innovation institutes. Multiple universities, and Regis had never done anything like this. He was an academic researcher, world class in his own right. His chancellor, I get presidents and chancellors mixed up, so sorry, of the University of California at San Francisco.
Chancellor
said, Regis, you need to go create this thing. And you're going to have to bring all the academics and have them think about relocating in South, by the way, a big effort, if you'd seen the pictures, a revitalization of a very distressed community. But what did he do? He said, I had no job description. I just figured my job is to connect everybody who needs to know everybody. And then my other job is, if I've got a gap in this ecosystem, my job is to orchestrate so that we solve that gap. It sounds easy, and it's not all done, but I have to tell you, that's what they work on. That's what their agenda is. And it can be from Regis goes around and talks to industry to say, how come you're not here? Why aren't you here? What's wrong? And he'll say, well, I can't stand the work with the university because they don't do X, Y, and Z. So his job is to fix that. Or his job is to connect entrepreneurs to the expertise. Or his job is to connect students with companies. You know, on and on. And then find dollars. And he has very little money. He was given $5 million to start with, and then he raises all of his own money. Same for Skip Rung. Same from, you know, Walla Walla certainly got money from applying for the state program. But that's pretty much on there, reorganize their own priorities. So the point, what makes it work? Success. You know, anywhere you go, once you have some successes and you see successes, then everybody wants to be part of your network. Is really the bottom line. And frankly, the other examples into the question of sustainability, Onami was the first pilot in Oregon. Right now, the second pilot is called iBest, and it's all about clean energy. So working on what all the industry around, the same kind of collaboration that I showed for the small technology in Oregon. But what works is, it's everybody wants to be part of a successful initiative, and they get value out of it, and they see that by leveraging their dollars and their resources and their time, it pays off to them much more than if they had done it by themselves. So it's not, there's no magic potion. It's a lot of hard work. And frankly, it's also a lot about personality. But Regis and Skip are different personalities. Steve Van Heusen, different personality. So even though it is about personality, there are differences in personalities. But it's that ability to connect and listen and figure out who needs to meet who.
Well, thank you very much, Mary Jo. Wonderful presentation.
Yeah,